United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Please be seated. We're very pleased to be here at Cardozo Law School, and we appreciate being invited. We are here because we are a national court. We have specific jurisdiction, but because we're national, our statute entitles us and even encourages us to sit around the country, and we do that once a month. And so we are sitting here in New York at several law schools and at several courts, and we're very pleased to be here at Cardozo. As you know, your school bears a distinguished name. Justice Cardozo was a great judge. Your school is also distinguished by the fact that my daughter got her law degree here, and I gave a talk here maybe 20 years ago. I don't remember what the topic was, but it probably was the thoughts of a new judge. In any event, we will proceed with our arguments. We have four oral arguments today. Three of them are patent cases, which is a little unusual. Two from a district court and one from the patent office. And we also have a case from the Court of Federal Claims involving a vaccine plaintiff. So let us proceed without further comment. Our first case is Pavo Solutions versus Kingston Technology, 2016-2209. Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I would like to address four topics: the interpretation of on and formed on, the failure of Kingston's obviousness case in light of the correct interpretation of those terms, the testimony of Mr. Bruce Pierman, and fourth, Kingston's waiver of its cross-appeal arguments. First, regarding the interpretation of on, the board misinterpreted on for at least three reasons. Number one, the context of the surrounding claim language is very important. We're not talking about the term on in the abstract. We are talking about whether a hinge protuberance on the side of a case must be attached to the case. And the answer is yes, according to basic physics.
So there is fundamental agreement that both sides believe that the two terms mean the same thing, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And both sides believe that the board erred by splitting the baby and saying one means one thing and the other means another.
Correct, Your Honor.
So the question is which one of you is right, not whether it's synonymous, they're synonymous, but which one is the correct one, based on the way you all believe the case should be resolved, correct?
Correct.
All right, so what is it? Where in the specification can you point us to anything that establishes that on and formed on have to be limited in the way that you describe?
Well, the patent shows in all embodiments that the hinge protuberance is attached to the case. And the invention simply would not work if the hinge protuberance were somehow loose, unattached to the case. I'm not even sure what that would look like,
work. Couldn't it be a rotating axle? An actual rotating axle with a, that comes through the two sides and the case is attached to the two ends of the axle, but nothing is attached to, the cover is attached to the two ends of the axle, but not to the case. So it just spins.
In Your Honor, you're describing the Matsumaya prior art. And the answer,
so why wouldn't it work?
The answer is Matsumaya and the situation you've described does not have a hinge protuberance on the case. It's not a hinge protuberance on the case. It's not attached.
Right,
it's a completely different design.
But you were making an argument, I think, as part of your contention for why it has to be attached, that it wouldn't work if it weren't attached. And it seems to me that the rotating axle would work so that the it doesn't work argument, I'm not quite sure what to make of.
Well, that's a completely different design that is not contemplated by this patent. It's not described in this patent. One of ordinary skill in the art would not be enabled to come up with an axle-based design based on the teachings of this patent. This patent is very specific about a particular hinge design that uses a protuberance on the case. That is what makes this invention so neat and why it has become a prevalent device. In one hand, you can rotate the cover around the case. It's simple, it's elegant, it's compact. It's a completely different principle of operation and design than an old-school, traditional, axle-based hinge.
Well, you're not claiming that there's any kind of actual lexicography in the patent, are you?
That's right. The patent doesn't define what the term on or formed on means because it doesn't have to. Every time it talks about the hinge protuberance being on the case, it is an attached hinge protuberance. It would be redundant to say it's attached. That was understood. That's what this invention is. Next point I'd like to make is that the proper claim interpretation standard here is the broadest reasonable interpretation. But that is not a license to take the broadest possible interpretation that you may find in any dictionary. It must be the broadest reasonable interpretation in light of the specification and as understood by one of ordinary skill in the art. And we were reminded of that very recently in the In re Smith International case.
Can you tell me about Claim 8? What is it in Claim 8 that would require attachment of the sort that you are urging?
Claim 8 is different, Your Honor. Claim 8 does not refer to a hinge protuberance.
It refers to a hinge, doesn't it?
It just says
or
a
being
hinge.
Hinged to the case?
It says the cover is hinged to the case.
I guess my line of thinking is Claim 8 presumably reflects some concept of the invention covered by the spec, and yet Claim 8 is a hard one to find a notion of attachment in, which suggests that maybe the spec is not so limited.
There is no notion of attachment recited in Claim 8. It is different in that respect. For every other independent claim, as well as dependent claims 11 and 12, the claim language says hinge protuberance on a side of the case. And that's where the issue of the claim interpretation issue comes into play. The meaning of on and formed on. It does not directly implicate Claim 8. The one issue in this appeal that does implicate Claim 8 is the testimony of Bruce Pearman. He explained that at the time of the invention, the conventional thinking was we must completely cover USB terminals because the speed of data transmission across USB terminals had just dramatically increased 40-fold so that the one bit was encoded on a harsh portion of a signal that lasts half a billionth of a second.
So cleanliness was particularly important.
It was critically important, and that was the conventional thinking of the time, and that's reflected in prior art like Matsumaya and Wu. And he testified that one skilled in the art with this understanding would have completely covered a USB terminal, and that, in effect, it's like a teaching away, not for the references itself, but one skill in the art with that understanding would not have made the modifications to the prior art that Kingston proposed. And that issue is not addressed by Kingston in its briefing, and it requires reversal for all claims.
But isn't part of the purpose of your own patent to keep it clean? Isn't that one of the features that you say is makes this patent distinct?
The cover, surprisingly, according to this invention, does an adequate job of protecting the terminals, but that was quite unexpected because the cover does not completely cover the terminals, but it's good enough. And like I said, it's compact. It can be handled in one hand. It's elegant. It's simple, easy to manufacture. So it was a surprising result. It was a turn away from the conventional thinking. So when the claims terms on and formed on are correctly interpreted in this patent, then the obviousness contentions just don't have merit. But to try to salvage its case, Kingston tries to change its obviousness case. In its IPR petition, it argued that Matsumaya's axle is a hinge protuberance. And that's what we had a trial about. Later, in the middle of the IPR, Kingston said, well, it would have been obvious to change Matsumaya's hinge design to make it use snap hinges instead, which are essentially hinge protuberances like the patent claims. And the board did not let Kingston shift grounds like that, and neither should you, because that is not the obviousness case that was put forward in the petition. And Kingston's argument in this regard depends upon an admission from Dr. Visser, which he did not make. Professor Visser was asked to draw what it would look like if you put a snap hinge on Matsumaya. And that is what is shown on page 4436 of the joint appendix. But he explained that is what the drawing shows is not what is obvious, but what it would look like based upon hindsight. He said he could not have come up with that drawing had he not first been exposed to the 544 patent. And finally, I do want to address the issue of waiver. In its notice of cross appeal, Kingston said that it was appealing from claims 4, 5, and 13. The claims were the board found to be patentable because the Kindig reference was non-analogous art. But yet, when they wrote their brief, everything in their cross appeal was about claims 1, 7, and 24 and the interpretation of formed on. So this is a shift, and violation.
Say that again. The notice of appeal specified particular notice of cross appeal specified particular claims. What were they?
Correct. 4, 5, and 13, and whether or not the Kindig reference is analogous art. That is not the issue that was briefed in the cross appeal, of course. And my final point here is that there is a rule on point. It's 37 CFR 90.2A32, and it requires that a notice of appeal or cross appeal in this type of appeal must specify the issues with enough information to allow the director to decide whether to intervene. And that did not happen here. It's a clear rule. It's an important rule to give the solicitor, PTO solicitor, an opportunity to intervene and for your honors to have the benefit of the PTO's thoughts in appropriate issues. And it was clearly violated here. So for that reason, I would ask your honors not to entertain the arguments about formed on and claims 1, 7, 24 and their dependent claims. Unless there are further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
We will do that, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you.
May it please the court, David Hoffman for Kingston, the appellee and cross appellant. Mr. Phillips addressed issues both from their original appeal as well as our cross appeal, so with the panel's permission, I'll address it the same way. I think this really, both in the way Mr. Phillips is arguing and the way that the PTAB addressed it, is a classic case of reading in an embodiment from the specification into the claims. And that's particularly, the wrong answer when you're dealing with the PTAB, where the standard is broadest reasonable construction.
With respect to the process point, was it a problem for the PTAB not to construe on until its final written decision without providing the parties any opportunity to respond to that?
I think it's okay, Your Honor. I mean, the underlying issues were debated by the parties, and the meaning of on needed to be addressed in rendering a decision since it was disputed, and the parties had full opportunity at the hearing to address and argue the meaning of on.
Okay, but you agree with your friend on the other side that the PTAB did err in not seeing these two terms as synonymous?
Yes, we do, Your Honor. We believe that they, as we said in our briefing, that they should have the same meaning, which is their broadest reasonable interpretation. There's nothing in the specification that would limit that interpretation. And for example, starting with on, and on a side of. If I place my pen on the side of the podium, it does not mean that my pen is bonded or built as part of the podium. I don't think anybody would take that to be the broadest reasonable construction, a requirement to glue or build together. Similarly with formed on. And while different wording is used, importantly, there's no claim differentiation here. It's two ways to essentially say the same thing, like computer and computer system, or inside and put inside.
Is there anything affirmative that you point to in the specification to show that this axle type format was encompassed within the meaning of the claims?
Yes, Your Honor, in various places. But importantly, the burden here is to restrict.
What are the various places?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, it's the choice of the language. The specification says very clearly that it may be formed integrally. That's permissive language. And importantly there, it's the use of the word integrally there. The patentee knew exactly how to define an embodiment where the protuberance
I'm sorry, but forming integrally is only one way of making the two things stick together, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
You do it in a mold, single mold, forming it integrally, and the other is glue or something like glue.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or welding or something like
there
that.
There are two example ways in which you could take a protuberance and make it, attached or integral. But clearly, I think what's important is that the patentee knew how to describe those, knew how to say we're forming this integrally or we're gluing it. And yet when it came to the claims, and I think Your Honor points out, they drafted the claims broader. Claim 8 doesn't have any requirement for attachment.
Well, they drafted some claims one way and some claims another way. And what the board said was because we are not prepared to find in the spec a particular limitation to attachment, something that's favorable to you, we're going to start at least with the words of the claim, which actually have somewhat different connotations in breadth. On the side of can mean something positional rather than something more, and formed on really doesn't sound like just positional, because you wouldn't be using the word formed, it's something else. So it reached two different conclusions about the broadest reasonable interpretation of the two different phrases.
Yes, sir. I have 2 points to that. I would say that the broadest reasonable interpretation of formed on doesn't have that connotation. For example, a thunderstorm formed on the east side of the city doesn't require there be an attachment between the storm and the city. It may not be the most common
usage. Context is everything, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor, and I think that's when we go to
the thunderstorm forming is not the same thing as a hinge thing on.
Your Honor, I agree on this. So I think we go to the specification and look for an inconsistency with not having attachment or not having glue. And what you see is that something could be placed on top or have contact with and be formed on. There's no requirement in the specification that in order for something to be formed on or for the invention to work, it needs to be bonded or integrally formed. And I think if this was the advantage and sort of the game-changing part of the invention that my colleague says, there would be description in the specification that described the importance of having the protuberance glued on or bonded or formed integrally with the case. And yet that's never there. It's simply one of two examples. And there's another example where they don't use anything like this.
Just to repeat, I think the board agreed with you to this extent. The spec doesn't limit it that way. And it said, we agree. It doesn't limit it that way. And different claims capture the narrower embodiment, let's call it. And some other claims, the mere on the side of, are broader than that. But it goes claim by claim.
Because
the words are, in fact, a little bit different.
They are, Your Honor. And I think the difference, the disagreement with the board is that if these had been dependent claims off of one another, there'd be an argument that you stagger them in that way where formed on needs to be narrower than on. But in this case, since the patent owner didn't choose to make that distinction and didn't choose to distinguish the two, it's two different ways, we believe, of saying the same thing, which is perfectly acceptable when you can do that. The patentee chooses their language. And so you start at the same place, at the broadest interpretation, And then you look to the specification to see if there's disclaimer, to see if there's definition, or to see if there's something inconsistent with the broadest reasonable interpretation. And if there isn't, that's the construction that should be used, even if it leads to a situation where two different phrases in different claims may be construed to have the same meaning.
This, as I read your petition, you pretty much put all your eggs in this basket that the construction should for the two should be the same, and that it should encompass this axle that is disclosed in Matsumiya, correct?
To be clear, Your Honor, our original petition certainly made the assertion that Matsumiya isn't limited to an axle, that it as an axle was one
well,
way.
Well, your point was that Matsumiya discloses the axle, and that's enough, assuming on and formed on would cover the axle.
Yes,
correct?
Your Honor. That the axle.
So how can you argue now to us the point that the board refused to let you argue because you didn't raise it till reply, that Matsumiya should be altered in a combination with other prior art to then read on the claims?
Yes, Your Honor. And again, this is the only thing that needs to be reached if the construction of the board holds. If the construction changes, and we believe Matsumiya obviously is no issue there with the board's decision. Because we asserted obviousness. And at the time we provided the petition, there was no construction in play yet. We obviously provided one. The board provided one. And then in response to that, given that we had asserted obviousness and that one of skill in the art would understand there to be a protuberance.
Well, the word
there.
Obviousness doesn't encompass every single thing. I mean, the board's rules are very strict. You have to lay out in your petition every single ground upon which you're asserting obviousness.
And I think that we did, Your Honor, in asserting that there's obviousness and that this limitation would be understood by one of skill in the art to be in the reference. All we did in follow on once we
but you didn't suggest any combination of references in your petition.
And we're still not suggesting a combination of references for this. There's always been a combination. The original petition was Matsumiya in view of Dung. That was the grounds on which the board found obviousness. The issue that Mr. Phillips was raising was an assertion that we had somehow waived the axle, if that's the way that the board construed the art, to be equivalent or obvious as a hinge protuberance if it requires this attachment. And I don't think that we did. I think we identified very particularly that it was obviousness being relied on for this limitation.
Does the axle in Matsumiya rotate?
I believe it does, Your Honor, if it's an axle embodiment.
What's that?
If it's an axle. Again, our expert testified.
I don't know if this is relevant, but it seems to me one can have an axle in which the wheels spin around it, but the axle doesn't itself rotate, or one can have an axle in which my two hands are attached to it and the whole thing rotates, since that's how you get the outside things. My hands rotating by rotating the axle. Does Matsumiya cover both of those? One of those?
I think it covers both of them, Your Honor. It's not specific in the exact way it's implemented. And in fact, our expert testified that it could cover, we call it posts on the end, don't even go all the way through, which is exactly what the board ended up construing formed on to mean.
What's your response to the issue of the waiver of your cross-appeal arguments? I mean, your friend is right that you cite a claim in your cross-appeal notice that you never even brief, and yet you then brief those your issues with respect to other claims that were not included in the notice.
Happy to, Your Honor. I mean, to be clear, in our notice, we identified that it was an appeal from all underlying orders, decisions, and rulings. Of the lower court. So we did identify the claims and identifying the orders, which is a very fixed number of claims. And I think there's no dispute between the parties that we've satisfied the docketing and the notice requirements for this court. So the only issue really becomes whether or not we satisfied them in regard to Rule 90.2. And that's obviously a PTAB rule or PTO rule that specifies that they want sufficient information. And we noted in our brief.
Well, you obviously didn't appeal from all underlying orders and rules. I mean, you wanted the obviousness determination to stand on whatever grounds, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. So it is broad in that sense, Your Honor. But it does cover all of the assertions that won against us.
Mr. Hoffman, you want to save some time for rebutting on the cross appeal and your time?
Yes, Your Honor, I've reserved the remainder of my time. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Phillips.
I'll be brief. I want to make 3 points. The first is I think what Judge Lurie said about context being important is very important in this case. When Kingston's counsel talks about a pen on the table, or as he did at the oral hearing before the board, or he said, Mr. Lawrence is on my right, but he's not attached to me. Those are statements about meanings of the word on in totally different contexts from this patent. There's nothing in this patent that is so broad and abstract. In this patent, we're talking about a hinge protuberance on the side of the case to perform the function that is described, and in every embodiment, it is fixably attached to the case. That's the way the invention works. There's really no other way for it to work based upon what is described in the patent. The second point I'd like to address is the permissive language in the specification. The specification says that the hinge protuberance may be integrally formed on the case or it may be adhered on the case. Either way, it is attached fixedly to the case. There is nothing in the form of permissive language in this patent that could possibly mean that the hinge protuberance is not attached to the case. And then the final point I would like to address is that in Matsumaya, the board found that the axle in Matsumaya is not attached to the case. They found that it's a traditional free-spinning axle, and that was the basis for the decision that the formed-on claims are not obvious in view of Matsumaya.
And am I correct that the board specifically rejected the alternative argument because it wasn't raised in the petition?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and so should you. Unless there are other questions, that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Hoffman has a few minutes directed only to the cross-appeal.
Yes, Your Honor, I'll keep it brief. Context is important, but context shouldn't allow an embodiment from the specification to be read into the claims. If proceeding down that route, what you end up with is like here, a situation where what are two permissive embodiments become the scope of the claims. And I think it's important to note that there is another embodiment, which presumably practices the invention that's described, where the hinge design is different, where the hinges are swapped, where there is no protuberance on the case. And that's specifically identified as an embodiment. I think as I noted, if the context is important and this is a significant part of the invention, then we would see that in the specification. We'd see a description of this hinge design being the fundamental important part of the invention. And what we see really is the invention is the idea of attaching the cover to the case. And so it can't get lost. The particular hinge design is not the inventive part of this invention. And again, the choice to use broad language makes perfect sense because the inventors at the time didn't want someone merely using one of a variety of commonly known hinge types to sort of get around their invention, which was the general idea of an attached cover. That's all I have. There are no questions for me.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. We'll take the case under advisement.